12th.
I'm in Professor John Ross's office in agricultural journalism. And we just wanted to talk a little about the merger topic. I wanted to get your response, first of all, on the scope of the topic, and if you thought it was broad enough. Does it go back far enough?
I think there's a little larger context, Martin, than is suggested in the outline. If you go, if you look at Wisconsin in the 1940s, 50s, and it's right after World War II, there's been a hiatus certainly in higher education. A lot of people have left home for the first time and they've returned. And there's more a world view, certainly. One of the things that's going on in the 1940s is a great upheaval in primary and secondary education in Wisconsin. We had relatively small rural schools, and there is a large movement to consolidate these schools on a countywide basis. There's state legislation which forces school integration. At that time, a lot of the old county normal schools are fading. There is an emergence of broader institutions scattered around the state. And so the whole mood is one of reform and increasing scale and merger of education.
Do you see that as something unique to Wisconsin or a national?
I think it's not unique to Wisconsin, but it's a little bit different from the national pattern because of the local government has always been strong in Wisconsin, and with the ethnic clustering of people, that's the whole point of World War II, because suddenly it's all mixed up and people aren't quite so isolated in their rural communities. And there's a change in attitude toward aggregation into larger units in education that precedes what happened to the university. So I think there's an environment, there's a setting for reorganization that would not have been possible 10, 15 years earlier.
But not strong enough, obviously. There was an attempted merger in the late 50s. And
right.
Not strong enough to carry it through at that point, though.
Well, any major change like this, I think, has opposition. Mm-hmm. I agree, it was not strong enough to carry it through. I do feel that under E.B. Fred and Elvium, the University was what's now the University of Wisconsin-Madison, then the University of Wisconsin, certainly had great national and international prestige. The research was strong, but it was fairly content to be what it was. If you look at the student enrollment, when I first came here in 1948, there were 17,000 students, and everybody was gasping with the large number of students, the surge of veterans from World War II. The proportion of the population going to higher education was increasing about 1% a year at that time, so there was a great deal more interest in higher education than ever before. But Madison was quite self-satisfied with itself and growing, but not terribly concerned about the other institutions. There were a lot of struggles over budget. Most of those struggles at that time with the very rapid growth were over facilities. There wasn't a great deal of argument over academic programs and degrees and those kinds of things.
Do you see a change in attitude then when the Madison attempts to get a foothold in Milwaukee and Green Bay in the late 60s?
I think it's incorrect to say that Madison was trying to get a foothold. I don't look at Madison as insular because we've had a worldview all these years, But I really do think that this pressure to merge and grow was superimposed on what Madison thought it was. There were a lot of people who had political antenna and said, if you don't do it, the consequences will be as such.
Mm-hmm. But who are you referring to there?
I think that people like Carl Runge, for example, saw some threats. I think Carrington's whole approach was one of expanding before we get cut out from certain kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. But when I said who were the people putting the pressure on, from what?
Well, part of the pressure was to elevate these campuses that were teachers' colleges mm-hmm. into general liberal arts programs. Part of that was academic desire to grow academically. Part of it was, I think, the thought that if you have a big campus at Stevens Point, it will be a boon to local business. Mm-hmm. So there were economic forces at work as well.
Coming from all parts of the state, then, mm-hmm. this pressure from the different
sure.
different campuses.
But I don't think Madison, as an institution, ever initiated any of these things. Mm-hmm. I think there were some people here who saw it as desirable. There were a lot of pressures from around the state to do it.
So that the efforts to you don't see then that the efforts to associate themselves with campuses in Parkside, Green Bay, as a response to that pressure, or for some other reason?
I think that the initiative for that came from administration, not from the faculty. Mm-hmm. I think that Harrington's position, and he can speak for himself on this, but from my perspective, with the emergence of the teachers' colleges into liberal arts colleges and some increasing status, if you look at the geographic location of those, they're essentially, with two exceptions, Whitewater and Oshkosh mm-hmm. in the western part of the state. It's odd because the population is predominantly Chicago to Green Bay. Mm-hmm. And I think that Harrington probably saw some attempts by those four-year campuses to build new campuses in that area and initiated the action. I think that was political, territorial, to try and pin down those areas. I will say that I think, given the emergence of Milwaukee, that there was a lot of support from Madison for Milwaukee as a major PhD institution. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that was totally political. I think there was an academic interest there.
Yeah.
On the extension thing, cooperative extension was really in the golden age at about the time of merger. I think that general extension was very healthy. Correspondence study, the Armed Forces Institute, and that sort of thing. General extension was never as much a part of the fabric of Madison as was cooperative extension. Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what you're talking about there, cooperative extension.
Cooperative extension is essentially ag and home ec.
Okay.
With three sources of funding, the Department of Agriculture, the state, and the counties. Pre-extension merger, co-op extension was in the counties with the county agent system. There were a lot of people in Madison who were members of department specialists, mm-hmm. agronomy, meat and animal science, agricultural economics. And then an administrative superstructure, which was responsible to the Dean of Agriculture. And cooperative extension comes from the idea of three sources of funding, county, state, and federal. Okay. So that's the yeah. meaning of it. Those people were integrated into Madison in terms of program and in terms of governance, the whole tenure review and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. In general extension, there were disciplinary programs, but they never really were accepted in many of the liberal arts departments. In some cases they were, but many of them were not. There was not a tenure acceptance of those people. To me, there was a move again pushed by Harrington to merge these two. I think that he felt that the scale would do two things. One is tie many of those areas back into the research and instructional programs that were not, but that it would be a stronger force statewide. It never really happened that way at all. The consequences of that extension merger were one that an independent hierarchy was set up, and then there was set in motion a lot of divisiveness about why shouldn't Eau Claire have an extension program, how much is Milwaukee going to get,
right.
And in my judgment, and it doesn't bother me to say this at all, the extension merger just simply didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
It pulled it away from the research base. Most of the research is in Madison, some in Milwaukee, a little scattered around the state. And it set in motion a hierarchy that just didn't work.
That didn't share the resources as effectively as formerly?
I think that, the budgets grew a great deal. No, but I think in terms of extending research to non-classroom clients, or extending the classroom to non-resident students.
So the Wisconsin idea has suffered?
Yeah, in my judgment it has suffered because of the extension merger. At least part of the momentum to split that up, which is now well underway, and get it back into the campuses, was political and budgetary. But I think the real reason is not irritation among legislators over the way it was operating. It was the fact that people recognized it wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a way to go yet
to
bring that back. Now, that extension merger preceded by a couple of years the university's merger. The university, there's been talk about merger, but had Pat Lucy not been governor, it would not have happened, I think.
You don't think it would have happened at all since?
That's right.
Yeah.
I think that Lucy was the catalyst to bring about the university merger. And there are half a dozen reasons why I think it did happen at that time.
Well,
but
I
think Lucy's the catalyst. I think that the pressure for collective bargaining probably enhanced the merger, although the proponents of bargaining have been deeply frustrated that they haven't gone ahead and gotten enabling legislation.
Right.
The fight really started at that time over whether or not to do that. I think Lucy's idea about scale and management and control was what he had in mind. I think that they felt that with merger it would be easier to pump more money into these other institutions. You can agree or disagree with that, but I think that was one of the reasons.
Which institutions?
The four-year campuses.
Okay.
In the first 2 years after the merger, there was a differential higher salary increase for the faculties at those other places. They said, well, now look, we've got this merged system, we've got a differential in pay, we want to catch those people up. And Chapter 36 of the statute says that there should be equalization.
Mm-hmm.
And so they pumped more money into the salaries at that time.
Do you see anything to the claim that it's going to save money? That it did save any money?
Well, I've got two comments on that. First, there are always exogenous variables that are more powerful than somebody's idea about saving money. Who would have guessed, even in 1972, that we'd have the number of students we do at the university? in terms of the proportion of the population that goes to school, Wisconsin is near the top in the nation. We're near the bottom in per capita expenditure, but in the number who go, we're near the top. Who would have guessed that we would have doubled the number of graduate students? Mm-hmm. There's been about a threefold increase in research funding since in the last 10 or 12 years, 300% increase, and that was not predictable. So those are the kinds of things that I think override the question of saving money.
Do you see merger as having a positive or negative effect on the use of those, that 300% increase, or in dealing with unforeseen?
Up to this point, no. Okay. I think that Madison now is on the razor's edge. Mm-hmm. We have fallen behind in salaries in a significant way. If we get caught in this very sticky web of fairness, then I think it's quite possible, I won't say likely, it's quite possible that you would see an exodus of faculty.
Yeah.
If you lose 200 to 300 of the most competent faculty, then you would see a downtrend in the research funding. And that would set in motion a series of other things. You wouldn't recruit as many grad students.
There are some who might say that that's already happening. That there's already
not, yet. No. Not yet. Not yet. I would say that there are some more departures than there would have been. We are now at a very decisive point. Yeah. And we're at the top in research funding in the nation. If you subtract a couple of defense contracts, there's nobody comparable to UW-Madison in research funding anywhere. And we continue to give the largest number of PhDs, and I think you could argue about how fragile that is, but I think that you could start a decline. So that I would say merger has not yet affected the research graduate training program, but it most certainly could. Mm-hmm. If we get caught in a system where they have to lower Madison in order to satisfy the other people,
the rest of the state. Okay.
That could happen. I don't think I kind of dodged your question about the cost saving. It's very hard to save money in terms of administration. And you've got to watch the size of administration, but it's not the big bucks anyway.
Yeah.
You're dealing with how much do you want to put in instruction per student? What kind of sophistication do you want in the training? Do you want to push ahead, for example, now in computer sciences,
yeah,
and do kind of the state-of-art things in training? Do you want to locate the programs around the state so that they are accessible? And if the answer to any of those is, well, maybe, then here's where one would save money, either in not offering one or more sophisticated engineering programs. We still, because of the tradition of the old teachers' colleges, have major programs in primary secondary education training around the state. We could save significantly state tax dollars if we cut in half the number of schools of education. And do you have the political will to do that? There are four-year institutions in northwestern Wisconsin, Superior, River Falls, Stout, and Eau Claire. Do you have the political will, for example, to collapse all of those in one location at Eau Claire? And if you're willing to take on really a major, significant thing like that, I think you could save money. There would be some economy of scale, but not unless you have a lot more guts than the politicians have shown so far. If they had followed merger with a deliberate reduction in duplication around the state, yes. But that didn't happen.
Didn't happen.
No. As a matter of fact, we continue. If you look at new programs in the last 2 years, all of these institutions want a major undergraduate program in computer sciences. It's a very expensive program per student. Should mm-hmm. they all have
yeah.
it? I don't know. You know, that's a political decision.
Yeah. A decision which probably hasn't been made much, or has been made less easy as a result of a merged system. Or?
I think it's been made less easy yeah. by merger. Because when you come together and the regions sit mm-hmm. and say, well, we did it for them, this argument over a PhD in nursing is an example.
Yeah.
The merged system said, well, we can't put down Milwaukee or Madison, so the easy way out is to give them both. I think in terms of the goals of management and economy, no. I think the merger may have actually increased the cost, lower mm-hmm. the efficiency, if that's the term you want to use in higher education.
When I talked to Donald Smith, he when I asked him that same question, his response was that Wisconsin was already, by 1970 or 71, one of the most efficient universities in the country, and that there wasn't really much room at all to save any more money.
Well, I'm not sure what criteria Doug is using.
Yeah,
cost per credit of instruction.
That, I believe that's his criteria.
Okay, I would go along with that. I would say that a major hunk of that is the research faculty in Madison. Mm-hmm. Now, it's illegal to transfer research funding into instruction. But there are a lot of benefits and perks you get just because it's there.
Right.
And so that a lot of that efficiency was because of the scope of Madison, not necessarily the scale of what you were doing. Mm-hmm. I do agree with Don that it was well run. The salaries, the faculty salaries, either in terms of inflation or non-university competition or other university competition, are fairly good until the early 1970s.
Yeah.
It's 71, 72 when that decline starts, proportionate to competition and to inflation and these other categories. And it's in the last 2 years that it has really turned down, the last 3 years.
You had You said that you're going to have two responses to my question about the cost. I don't know if you have gotten to both of them.
No, I think I've forgotten it.
Yeah. Okay. I wanted to ask you a couple more questions about the scope of this. If you had any ideas about other people that I should talk to, or people that you that I didn't have written down here. Is there anyone around, for example, who can tell me more about the situation leading towards merger in the 60s, besides, say, Harrington? I imagine I would go back and talk to him.
Well, one of his assistants is in town, that's Chuck Engman. I don't know whether Eugene McPhee is still alive or not.
Yeah, I don't either.
Carl is not, unfortunately, Carl Runge. You certainly ought to talk to Senator Bobby Knowles, who's now a regent.
Right.
Knowles was in the legislature at that time and was opposed to merger. He now says he supports it. Senator I'll think of it later in Collier. There are a couple of people who were still in the were in the legislature at that time that might be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you ought to talk to Warren Knowles as well as Bobby Knowles. He preceded Pat Lucey as governor.
Right.
I suspect, have you covered pretty much the faculty who took part in it?
I have them all pretty much done. Yeah. Everyone, I think.
Walter Hollander was a Republican senator at the time and very much an advocate of the university in general, and I think Senator Hollander is still very alert and might have some interesting comments from the political side of it.
Well, was there any other aspect of the topic that you had any thoughts on?
I think that the changeover of presidents, it's not totally clear why Harrington lost his credibility with the regents, but he did. And then his replacement with John Weaver, who came here thinking he was going to head the University of Wisconsin and then clean up the whole system. I think that Weaver tried very hard, but he was not nearly as strong a personality as Harrington. And from the standpoint, from the partisan standpoint of Madison and what was happening, that was a most unfortunate situation. Because Weaver was brought here under Republican auspices and things changed downtown. Never did have rapport with Pat Lucy. And to the extent that history is vectored by individuals, I think you could say that, that it was in that case.
You think he was effectively pinned down by Lucy?
Sure.
And
yes.
And the whole.
Lucy not only abdicated the merger, but he set in motion a whole series of management things. Mm-hmm. And Don Smith lived through some of those days. But it was not just the merger, it was the various kinds of fiscal management things that were successfully imposed on the university that, the enrollment funding business, for example. The idea was that it goes up when enrollment goes down.
Right.
Everybody knows enrollment's going to go down and it's not, and so it'll go down, but it never went up. The enrollment funding was always shaved off and we never really got it. And one of the consequences of that is that Madison didn't quit, but really cut back the hiring of assistant professors so that the merger plus the management from the Department of Administration has changed the structure of the university in significant ways that are not really, haven't really been noticed as much. And I don't think anybody predicted any of those internal structural changes. I think you can tell that I think that the Pat Lucy administration was on balance harmful to the university, very harmful. Mm-hmm. For a series of reasons.
You're speaking of Madison or of what was the
I'm speaking of Madison.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really don't consider myself too much of an expert on the other.
Right.
Purposes.
A result.
Here, let me stop. I'm going to flip.
I don't think what you're writing about should be too heavily influenced by the current argument over salaries.
Mm-hmm.
But let me make a point on that. You will hear that the salaries have been diverging and that they should be either the same or they should not diverge further. That's not a correct statement. But let's take the current proposal, the one that the regents passed last week. And at the end of the biennium, with the proposal that O'Neill put in, Madison would be about at the median in salaries of a compromise peer group, a peer group of public institutions around the country. if you project O'Neill's salary proposal for these other campuses, they'll easily be in the top quartile of a national comparison group. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the biennium, we will have their salaries certainly not further away from Madison's and perhaps closer, but in the top 25% of 100 or 120 universities around the country that have similar missions. But Madison will be wavering around the middle. Mm. Okay, what are the consequences of that, either academically or politically? Madison will look at the end of the biennium like it's sagging. If you have that constant pressure to even things out on the basis of equity or justice or whatever other criteria, and you ignore both the market and the different missions, then I'm certainly not sanguine about the future mm-hmm. of Madison. You've got to break through and say, yes to the Commonwealth, this institution is worth something. It is different and it's worth more, or it's going to change. And so I don't know whether or not what I think is going to happen will bring any pressure to bear on the idea of merger, but I think you could say the jury is still out. Mm-hmm. There are some high risks to an institution like this if you demerge. You don't solve all the political problems, but you do at least have a chance to argue that it's somehow different. If the missions and the staffing are homogenized, then I think you will look back 10 years from now, 20 years after merger, and say that yes, the merger did that.
Yeah. You're saying that, I mean, despite the fact that we do have specific missions on the record, that mm-hmm. merger has an homogenizing effect.
If you look at the, you can set up the missions and set up the criteria, then you get down to the crucial point, like average salaries, or like distribution of degrees, mm-hmm. or like working conditions or workload, and the pressure through the budget is to equalize these. You take a campus like Parkside, and they say, why, we know we're as good as they are. And you get a mindset there that forces you to shave a little bit here and add a little bit there. And unless you can keep those conceptually separate, you are going to have them turn out to be similar. Mm-hmm. So the issue is in the statutes or in the structure, if you say we do want a great institution, we can't afford seven instead of one, it doesn't make sense, then does the structure and the policy help that or hurt it? And that's why I think that Madison right now is on the razor's edge, because we are now, 14 years later, getting the full test of the impact of the merger right now.
What do you think in the last 14 years that what could Madison have done? They seem to have, my impression just from the reading that I've done is that the regents here and the campus took merger almost lying down.
I think that's correct. I think that there's nothing inherently wrong with being apolitical. Uh-huh. We've always prided ourselves in being lively, in being interested in policy. But there was a diffidence, if not a disdain, for the political fray about yourself. And that is not the same now. The faculty is much more active mm-hmm. politically. Mm-hmm. There's a one institution, one vote psychology in this when you get in the joint committees. Right. It's certainly not representative either in terms of numbers or the budget. It's one institution, one vote, and so when you get in those joint committees, you lose all the votes.
But it wouldn't surprise me at all if the legislature didn't at least look again at the whole issue of merger, particularly now with the demerger extension and the recognition that it was wrong. It's clearly wrong. But I wouldn't predict it.
Yeah.
If Madison loses this round in a major way on the salary thing, then we're at a fork in the road, and the question is, do we settle down and take it?
Yeah.
Or do we fight to try and maintain the...
Do you see any relation between the development of collective bargaining and that issue with prospect of merger?
Absolutely. Yeah. To some extent, the argument over bargaining precipitated this larger question.
Mm-hmm.
If, for example, you look at Minnesota, they passed enabling legislation and the state universities adopted bargaining, and Duluth did, and Minneapolis has so far turned it down. 5 years after the adoption of bargaining in Minnesota, the faculty pay thing is a matrix of rank and time and service. Yeah. There is no variation from one institution and another in salaries. It's pegged in advance. Now, the reason the administration went to that is they were getting a mountain of grievances when anybody deviated. So they said, to heck with the grievances. Mm-hmm. We're going to level the salaries. Where you get several years of evidence of this, this appears inevitable. In other words, the merit thing disappears because of the internal squabbling and pressure. Now, this is not to say that the merit thing is without sin,
right?
But it does change. And the statute that covers bargaining in Wisconsin, Chapter 111 of the statute, has a very strong management rights clause in it. And you can say, well, we're not going to enforce that clause in the university, but 3 years later you will be.
Yeah.
And that management right is to fire, hire, and transfer. And management will inevitably assume that in order to have some relative strength in dealing with the union.
Yeah.
The merger, the bargaining, and the governance thing are all intertwined. There's no way to separate them.
Right.
I think that the passage of a bargaining bill and the likely adoption of it by some institutions could accelerate discussion about demerger. I think it's possible.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else?
No, you're getting tired of talking.
No, not really.
No, okay, we'll quit.
Okay.